Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Ideas podcast for August the 13th, 2021. This is episode number 71. Today, we'll be talking about Tesla Impact Report, Rivian Customer First Drive Report, and Audi Skysphere Electric Roadster makes its debut, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the highly esteemed Mr. Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the magnetic Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which, of course, is available on all the best podcast platforms. And, of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Autospec Studios. He also puts together photographically phenomenal videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. And if you're watching on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button below there. And of course, if you can ring that bell icon on Twitch or YouTube and be informed about any new videos that pop up on our channel. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody. So as usual, we'd like to start with what we've been driving this week. Tom, you've been on vacation, and I think I saw a picture of you cruising in a restored classic Chris Craft or something that was not electric, I don't think. But did you get an EV at all in the last few days?
I actually have. I'm driving an ID4 first edition this week.
Okay.
So some content should be coming out with that soon. But I've had the ID4s before. Kyle and I have both driven them many times, and I think I speak for Kyle also. It's one of our favorite new EVs that hit the market this year. Every time I drive the ID4, honestly, I like it even more. I mean, it's a great family hauler, you know, compact SUV, moving the kids around, just doing things that you need in everyday life, you know, and not worrying about, you know, you're not taking this out on the drag strip and racing. You're not going to see a lot of ID4s against, you know, a Tesla Model S Plaid or whatever on the drag strip. But, you know, not every electric vehicle has to be, you know, 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds. But what this is meant to do, you know, is just be like a practical family mover. It's excellent at that. And every time I drive it, it reminds me how good of a charging EV it is. The thing really, I mean, it's not top of class, but for in its segment, for its price point, it charges great. I mean, Kyle did, where'd you go? Florida to Colorado, Kyle, I think.
Yeah, like Florida, Colorado, and then out to LA. So I've done it cross country pretty much fully, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it really, I plugged in the other day to DC fast charger. I was at like 19%, and I was at 81% in 30 minutes, in a half an hour. Nice. 20 to 80 in 30 minutes. Unplug, move on. You know, when you're at 80% state of charge, you got about 200 drivable miles with an ID4 before you're really pushing it. So it's like, you know, you're on a road trip, you plug in at 20%, you spend a half an hour where you are, and you unplug and you go, and you're good for 200 more miles of driving, another 3 or 4 hours of driving. So, you know, the ID4 can road trip just fine. And at home with 11 kilowatt charging, it recharges really quickly. It's just, like I said, when I first started talking here, I know I'm rambling a little bit.
No,
every time I drive the car, it reminds me how good of an EV it is. I'm really, you know, Volkswagen did a good job with it.
I'm looking forward. I think I'm going to get a chance to drive a special one of those in about a month or so, and maybe even see where they make them or where they're going to make them. In Tennessee.
I'll see you there, depending on which way you're going.
Okay, that'd be cool, man. Kind of
also, I wanted to mention, since we're on ID4 topic, I don't know if you guys know, my dad bought an ID4. He bought a base ID4 Pro, and there's a whole bunch of chatter online about dealers charging markups on these, and that's totally true.
Okay, there are your dad dealers, didn't play markup.
Oh, your no, dad he got $1,500 off. Okay. And now he's buying another ID4 from another dealer, and he's going to get $2,200 off. So you just got to call around and go find the right car. Every dealer's this way. Same with Mach-E. A dealer here in town wanted to charge us $5,000 over for Mach-E. Ooh. We went to Nebraska and got $1,000 off. This was way early on. So you just start calling around and drive a little bit.
That's funny. You mentioned that. I shared a tweet last night from Kyle Field, who writes for, I believe, Clean Technica. He's a really nice guy, and But he went around to the Ford dealership and he saw there was a $7,500 markup on a Mach-E that put in there, which basically takes away your tax, federal tax credit, you know, right off the top. And yeah, and then he also went to a Volkswagen shop and they didn't have a markup on there, but they said they would be having there would be markups coming like in around $2,000 neighborhood.
Yeah, but this is the state of the auto industry. Look, I personally, right. I would never pay more than sticker for a car. Right. I think you can just call around and always get something for at least MSRP. I'm fine paying MSRP and have for exciting new hot cars that, you know, work. But paying over, I don't know. Look, dealers can charge whatever they want. They're a business. And if they can sell it, more power to them. But I just think that money should go to the automakers. I think it's totally not correct in any way whatsoever. I'm not a fan of ADM is the technical term, you know, additional dealer markup. So,
all right. Market adjustments. Sometimes they'll put on the sticker.
And I think it's being compounded by the fact that we have this chip shortage and vehicles are in short supply. So it's not just the fact that this is a new car and it's hot and people want it. I think
yeah, it's nothing to do with that.
We have to factor it in with the fact that you just can't get cars these days. Used cars are selling for crazy amounts because people need cars and there's just no supply. So, you know, that definitely has a lot to do with it. One person asked me in the comment section, it's up a little bit, it was Nathan Green, how does the ID4 compare to the Mach-E? So, you know, they're really different vehicles. I know when they kind of launched relatively at the same time, they're both kind of crossover. So I think a lot of people are so interested in just comparing the two. And I really look at those two cars, even though I know they're in the same segment, as totally different cars. They have totally different personalities. You know, the Mach-E is definitely more sporty. I think the Mach-E maybe is more of a Model Y competitor, if you want to call it that, you know, where it's a sporty crossover where, you know, it's a lot of the driving dynamics there's an emphasis on, you know, people that are Mustang enthusiasts and the driving dynamics. The ID4 is a family car. That you put that up against a Toyota RAV4, a Subaru Crosscheck. Those are the customers I think that are really looking at the ID4. So I don't really like comparing those two vehicles that much because I think they have like almost different purposes. There's definitely crossover, but you know, and they both have their pluses and minuses. But you know, of the two, honestly, while I love the Mach-E and I think it's cool. And I like that it has a Mustang badge on it. I always liked that from the beginning. If you told me you could have, you know, this one or this one, I'd probably take the ID4 unless you're talking about the high performance Mach-E. I might have to go for that. Yeah. The GT performance. I might have to go for that in the yellowish color, what's it called, like burnt orange or something. That one might be my first pick. But if you said, look, we're going to give you $45,000. You can get one of these two cars. I think I'd probably take the ID4.
Right. Speaking of a little shortage of supply, we had an article on the 11th just a couple of days ago that the Mach-E would be would be delayed by a minimum of 6 weeks, like new deliveries, because they're being affected. Ford is being seriously affected by the global semiconductor chip shortage. So that's something to keep in mind. Yeah. There's a GT. Looks so great in that orange.
Oh yeah, I love that. That might be my favorite. I thought the blue was going to be the grabber blue, but seeing it in that color, I think that looks so sweet.
Right. Hey, so Kyle, were you driving anything electric this week?
Yeah, I was just trying to think, and yes, but I can't remember what it was. I drove Model 3 Performance, took the Smart out, I drove a whole bunch of gas cars, took the e-tron GT out.
Yeah, I saw you had a motorcycle pull out your RV out of the sand.
Got the Sprinter beached pretty hard, pulled it out with a dirt bike. That video is now live on Out of Spec Motoring. It won't do well because we didn't put an electric road trip in the title. I don't know. People just care about EV stuff on that channel, but that's okay. We have other channels for our combustion stuff, maybe where we should host those videos. I'm trying to think what I did electric. I was supposed to drive an electric Razor side-by-side in Moab this weekend, but that is down for upgrades. Okay. So
was that a Tesla conversion?
That was the Model 3 powered Razor. So that was the reason that we kind of went on this trip. Okay. And then
is that the one I told you about like a month ago?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. At least it almost happened.
Yeah, well, and it'll happen again. It's getting prepped for the SEMA show, I guess. So that's that.
Okay.
And yeah, I don't really think there's anything else too exciting going on. September, just as an inside for everything I'm working on right now, all of our prep, all of the team's work is in preparation for the month of September. September is going to be daily videos on many of the channels we're filming for now, including Inside EVs US. We'll be having plenty of YouTube videos kind of sparking up there. We're going to be doing a merchandise giveaway of a free Tesla Powerwall and all the installation stuff as part of that. And so, yeah, we're going to go sort of like EV Central on out-of-spec reviews and out-of-spec motoring and all of the POV stuff and a daily news. It's going to be crazy. So stay tuned for September. We're all prepping for it now. That's why we've kind of been lazy on getting videos out.
All right.
I did a bit of a road trip yesterday, and I needed to deliver some stuff to our colleagues that work for an associated company of ours, and I had to deliver some mics and sound gear. So I left home with full charge on the Kona and did Dorset down on the south coast up to London, around London, so, you know, 20 miles an hour max, but then out onto the ring road, the circular, up at 75 miles an hour. I went out to the southeast, where called somewhere, you know, a county of Kent, where the Channel Tunnel is, and he lives near there. Back around the M25 and back down to the south coast. I did 280 miles, a lot of it at 75 miles an hour, but not all. And I've still got 20 miles left. And it's just like a reminder that Kona is just a beast on efficiency. It's warm, it's summer, I get it, but it goes back next week and it gets swapped out the same day for an ID3 Life Pro, which I'm about performance. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We don't hear about that over here too much. So yeah,
I'm gonna miss the Kona though, and it's off the back of there's a I don't know if he translates stateside, but a TV presenter. He's a motorbike rider called Guy Martin. Yeah.
Rides I saw this. Not
he
good.
Rides like the TT, like the TT races. He's a crazy fast bike rider, but also a great. You know, and he still fixes trucks for a living, but a great TV presenter, very down to earth. But he made a show about electric vehicles, and he's got, you know, millions of fans, and he owns a Honda E, like he's an EV driver. And he said, yeah, he said, in my opinion, electric vehicles aren't ready yet. If you do 50 miles a day, maybe you should get one, but otherwise, don't get one. And he did like a road trip, and he turned up at broken chargers, which have all been replaced now because it was filmed a long time ago. Right. So that was so it just sent. Like, I just got so angry seeing that, because he's got many fans who are petrol heads that will worship what he says and listen to him. He's a very young, down-to-earth guy. And he's like, yeah, if you'd only do 50 miles a day, maybe EV's okay, but anything more, no. And I'm like, well, I know I've got to do these deliveries yesterday, and I know I won't have to. I could have charged and just quickly 20 minutes, but I did it all, dropped it on my drop-offs, got home, 20 miles left, 280 miles done. Like, what planet is he on? So... who knows why
Honda
people say
e
these
is plant is but
ah that's well yeah right and but yeah, who knows the motivations that people say stuff. Maybe he genuinely believes it, maybe he was encouraged to say that for the TV program, because, you know,
right, maybe I think he's always had that kind of opinion. Yeah. I remember when because we used to have the TT0 races on the Isle of Man, and I remember him like poo-pooing the electric version of that, you know, saying,
yeah, like, even though he owns a Honda, maybe he hates electric, maybe dissing EVs gets more viewers, I don't know, but you know, or maybe
he just,
I don't know his motivation for saying that, but it's obviously it's not true. Was it a lie? I wouldn't call it that, because maybe he believes it, but
right.
Hey, so yeah, if any of my UK viewers of our UK viewers saw that, just, man, make sure people don't believe him.
Right. Well, we'll have to get you your own video show up to show them what can be done.
I got to start doing it. I got to start filming stuff. We were talking about that recently, but that's a different topic.
Right. So, yeah. So VW ID3 coming up. We're looking forward to that. And
yeah, it arrives next week.
We need to get you with an Ioniq 5 since they're over there in England now.
Yeah, so they were pushed back by a week, but I know a guy who's got, he lives close to me, so it was meant to be next week. His arrived, been pushed back just by a week. So as soon as he's got his, maybe even follow him on pickup day. I can't wait to see it.
Well, that'd be great.
And see how he is. So next week I'm on vacation, so I'll miss you guys next week. Not that much.
Yeah, go enjoy your vacation. Don't think about us.
So next week's show could be a little janky because maybe I'll be running the controls. Martin here does a really great job of, you know, popping up the pretty pictures and videos and stuff. So I'm not so great at that. But yeah, but if you all have a suggestion of who we might, you know, stick in his spot there for next week's show, you know, let us know in the comments on YouTube or on Twitch or Twitter or Facebook. All right. So ready to roll? Let's talk about the Tesla impact report for a little bit. So the yearly impact report came out this week. The PDF file is like 94 pages long and covers environmental impact, product impact, supply chain, and people and culture. It starts out by stating the company's bold ambitions. By 2030, think about this now, Tesla aims to sell 20 million vehicles a year and deploy 1,500 gigawatt hours of storage per year. So to put that in the scope of vehicle scope of vehicle production into perspective, a little less than 15 million vehicles were sold in the U.S. in 2020. So more than that, and projected worldwide sales in 2021 were just under $70 million. So basically, Tesla wants to sell roughly 20 to 25% of all the vehicles around the planet in 9 years. That's more than double what Toyota, the largest global producer of vehicles, manufactured in 2020. And to put it in another light, it wants to produce annually almost seven times the electric vehicles that were produced last year altogether, about 3.1 million. So that's an amazingly ambitious target that is hard to believe is reachable. But if you don't shoot for the stars, you'll never get to Mars. And that, of course, is Musk's other goal. Not so much getting to Mars, but making human life multiplanetary, which he believes starts with Mars. And I mentioned that so I can bring up this. The YouTube channel Everyday Astronaut uploaded a trilogy of videos that take you around the SpaceX Starbase in Boca Chica, Texas, while being guided by Elon Musk. So if you only watch one episode, I would watch the last one. It's much shorter than the others, and it's basically tagging along with Musk as he checks in on operations there. And it'll give you some good insight, I think, about his ambition and how he uses speed as a tool for success. It's also just interesting to watch the guy. He's like a multi-billionaire, interact with his staff, and, you know, he gets deep into the details of the job. He's climbing up like whatever multi-stories and whatever, just rickety scaffolding, looking at, you know, welds on stuff. But anyway, getting back to report, I think it's safe to say that the environmental impact of the company is given the most emphasis. So we won't get into the details, but I'd like to encourage you to definitely check it out. It's a layer of transparency that we don't get from other automakers. Of course, don't just accept everything it says as gospel, but it can at least be a guide for how, you know, the company would like to be seen. For instance, like talking about affordability, they compare the BMW 3 Series, the Mercedes C-Class, and Audi A4 with the Model 3 SR Plus. So I'd like to see maybe the Model 3 long range added instead, you know, or, you know, along with, because if you're looking at BMW 3 Series or those cars, there's a good chance you're looking at the Model 3 long range. And, you know, I feel like they maybe picked the SR Plus just because it's, you know, more competitively priced and it just reflects better on the company, but it's maybe not as realistic. But so others can probably pick holes in some of the other statistics it reports, but at least they're doing some reporting, and it's something I'd like to see across the industry. And maybe if it was, we could have things checked by independent third parties. But anyway, Tom, I know you didn't read this on your vacation, but did you have any thoughts on the specifics of it at all, or maybe like the whole thing generally?
Yeah, I didn't do my homework. The one thing I like about these reports is I know most people realize that transitioning to electric vehicles is better. You know, there's plenty of reports out there that might argue against that. You know, we know they're funded. They have special interest groups that are putting out reports saying that electric vehicles aren't better. They don't emit less and so forth and so on. That's why we need reports like this that are fact based and that, you know, really put it down on paper so people could take a look and see what the impact is. And that's why I need these. Not that everybody's going to read them, but we need to have them produced so we can really see the tangible results, how much, you know, carbon is saved and, you know, what the effects of the Tesla fleet are. I know other manufacturers put these out and very few people read them, but it's good to have them to be able to call upon when you need to actually, you know, argue with people over is our EV is a better way to go. So it's good to see these things being produced.
Yeah, Martin's showing us some different screens if you're watching us on Twitch or YouTube. We're just seeing some different things. And there was one interesting one about the tracking the battery degradation over time. Let me go back. Time.
That's fascinating. Yeah, it's 90% on average after 200,000 miles, which is, again, you meet so many people that say, well, you know, batteries last 5 years. They've got to put them in landfill at the end. And so
I had some comments on that yesterday on the site.
Yeah, so, you know, inevitable. But yeah, to see this, and there's been a lot of crowdsourced data, and Tesla have put something similar to this out before. And there's always stuff online. I think there's a Norway project as well that collates driver data. But it's great to see this. You know, 200,000 miles and 90% capacity left is a great data point to prove to people, hey, these cars, the cars that are built well and that manage their battery well, will just keep on going on and going on.
Right. They get deep into the minerals and mining and the materials like the lithium and the cobalt and different things and where that's sourced and how it's sourced and what their plans are to improve, you know, different aspects of the environmental viability of everything. So, you know, it's always good to read because those are other things that, you know, you always get pushed back on. People say, well, what about the mines of children in Africa? And, you know, a lot of cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC. And so in this report, they list, you know, their cobalt suppliers and which ones have supply coming from the DRC. And those are coming from companies that are being audited to make sure that they want to put like a blockchain type of technology in to track the source of their minerals, you know, so they can be sure that it's not relying on terrible situations like children, you know, mining, which is, of course, awful. Yeah. So I don't know. Kyle, did you have anything you wanted to say about this at all?
I'd love that they're trying to be as transparent as possible. I don't know if they quoted where they got all this data from or how all of it's compiled. I'm sure that would, you know, maybe they wouldn't respond to it because there's no press department. But either way, I'm with you. I think it's great that they're being as transparent as anyone can expect, really. And it seems pretty good. I mean, I think a lot of the points here show how they're doing really well. And I would, you know, I don't know. I'd love to see some more stuff on, you know, their safety reports with autopilot. I think there's a lot of holes in that data. I haven't had a chance to look at this one per se, but awesome. Seems good. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's nice to know what's going on inside the companies that a lot of people are invested in.
Right. There is a big section on that. But like you said, there's, you know, people like to we'll pick holes with the way they choose their data and things. And
yeah, well, all data is cherry picked, right? No matter how they put it. Sure. And so, you know, can they sway the same numbers can be portrayed in different ways. You know, at the end of the day, this is great. I think it's an awesome starting point. I hope people sort of analyze it if they want. To me, I'm more interested in the car side of things and the driving. But you know, at the end of the day, it seems like a great idea to release stuff like this.
Right. I did a little Googling last night looking for, you know, OEM, put OEM name, environmental impact report, and nothing except for one company from 2005. I won't name them. Had some activist investors, you know, sort of force them to put one together. Yeah, but that's a while back. So, yeah. So let's move on then. So the 2021 Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance kicks off Sunday, and Audi will be there with the first of a trio of concept cars. This one is called the Sky Sphere. The other ones are, I think, what's it, Urban Sphere and Grand Sphere. But anyway, this is the Audi Sky Sphere concept, and as you can see, if you're watching this on video, it's a two-seater coupe with a neat little party trick. It's got no roof as well, which I love, because I live in rainy Florida and no roof is like super practical here. But it's got a neat little party trick. It can stretch its wheelbase by 10 inches and go from like a sport mode to GT mode. GT mode also features a level 4 autonomous ability, or at least a pretend level 4 autonomous ability, because I don't believe Audi has that technology quite there yet. And the steering wheel and pedals all tuck away to give the driver more room. It's kind of much, if there's a little video there, you can watch the animation of it, like folding the steering wheel, folding into the dash, and the pedals kind of, you know, going away. The proportions are super nice and based on the 1937 Horsch Roadster that won Best of Show at Pebble in 2009. Horsch is one of the four brands represented in the Audi Four Rings logo. So this car is a rear wheel drive with 624 horsepower and has rear axle steering as well to help the handling. Range is a theoretical 310 miles from an 80 kilowatt hour pack. So that's, they would like to let us know that it's going to be very efficient. Of course, this concept is just a design exercise, and we know, you know, some of you don't care too much about them, including, I suspect, Kyle here. but Kyle, are there any elements here that you'd like to see in a future Audi?
Not really.
Nothing?
I don't think it looks that great. Okay. I saw someone post this next to the Maybach 6, I think it was. Martin, I don't know if you can pull that up. And I believe that was an electric concept as well. And wow, does that just look so much more true to the brand's heritage. Personally, I think design doesn't play into what I'm interested in. So if you're going to make a made up imaginary car, why do you just put an 80 kilowatt hour battery in there? Put a 1,000,000 kilowatt hour battery in there. You'll never have to charge it. And by the way, it weighs 2 pounds. I mean, that's, to me, if we're making made up cars here, the idea, this thing looks amazing, especially from the rear, this Maybach 6. I don't remember if it's electric or not, but someone put it side by side and I'm just like, yeah, wow.
And the hood folds up from the sides up into the middle, has like a spine in the middle.
Look, I was supposed to be there, we were going to see this car. And as we were packing up to head to California for Pebble Beach, I was just like, I looked at my email. I'm like, oh, I have a lot to do. So Timon drove out there in my Model 3. He's out in California now filming with a few cars. I believe he's actually working with our colleague Clint from Motor One to film some videos.
Oh, cool.
I was thinking maybe I'd fly out tomorrow and go see the concourse on Sunday. So we'll see. I haven't decided yet, but maybe I'll wake up in the morning and say, this seems like something I should go to. I've gone, not every year, but I've gone to this before and a few times. And it's always cool, but it's a lot of, again, concept cars, unobtainium cars, you know, $70 million McLaren SLs from back in the day, gull wings. I mean, cool stuff. But not a big focus on the things our viewership cares about. So for me, as an enthusiast, it's fun. As a business decision, I should probably stay here and plan for the month of September. But we'll see. Back to the concept, though. Honestly, I don't like it. It's too little lines. It's not substantial enough. If you look at the shifting cluster, the instrument cluster, all of these little details just make it look busy. And I hope that's not the design direction that Audi's going. I think Audi does a really good job with it, especially the interiors these days. But they're simple and they're chunky and they're great. But this is like way too intricate to wear the four rings, I think.
Right on. Well, good. What's the kind of design feedback we want from you, Kyle?
That's the thing. No one should ever ask for design feedback from me because I don't know what I'm talking about. Most cars don't look good.
Okay. So I just want to mention that I mentioned before there are two other vehicles in this series. So the Grand Sphere coming is particularly interesting because it supposedly will be a production intent vehicle. And I think we've seen a teaser image of that already. And it's a bit out there as well, like style wise. So not all of these things are going to be like total concepts. I'm not exactly sure how the sphere thing concept really works with Audi's other vehicles that are coming out like next year, like the A6 e-tron and the Q6. But yeah, just to let know. But there is one kind of interesting car that I kind of wanted to mention in passing. We have a story up today on the Inside EVs about it. It's the Pininfarina Battista, and which basically is a Rimac Navara, Tom would like me to point out. But it's a, you know, I think
Wait,
actually.
Did you say Rimac? Did you hear? Did you see what happened with Rimac this week?
No, I mean, maybe. I don't know.
On the drag strip with Drag Times. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Tell us about it.
So I was scrolling through Facebook Shorts and I saw a Rimac shredding down a drag strip, and it was with our friends over at Drag Times. And right. I was like, this is wild. Nice. So they apparently got to do the first independent acceleration testing of the Nevera on a, you know, fully prepped VHT drag surface. And man, did this thing spin the earth backwards. That was crazy. It was spinning on a sticky surface 3/4 of the way down the track. That's pretty amazing.
Right. That's at the Famoso track in California. And they didn't give us the time exactly. There's like two videos. Another video showed up, I think, was it yesterday? That gave us the, it's like 1.5 Gs.
Oh, yeah. So I haven't really followed it. I just saw that and I put it in the Inside EVs group chat to hope someone would write about it, because this is way cool. And I love that Drag Times got early access. Personally, I'm a big fan of a lot of these, obviously, because I am one, more of these independent, smaller YouTube channels compared to just Motor Trend and Motor One and Car and Driver getting everything. So definitely think that there's a lot more passion here. No, look, you know, you can argue that, but at the end of the day, I don't know. I think Drag Times does the best acceleration testing. This is what he does. It's his specialty.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely, I mean, Motor One doesn't do, I think as I mean, my work email ends in Motor One. So I feel like I'm a Motor One
doesn't do instrumented testing.
No, they don't. Or at least very rarely. That's not really their gig. And Brooks, you know, does. And he does a great job of it. And I love watching, you know, his videos.
That's the point I was getting at. I wasn't saying don't give it to Motor One. I'm sure they'd love to give it a great review. I'm just saying for acceleration, Brooks is the first one the community goes to get sort of this independent, honest feedback.
But how cool that they actually are aware of him and what he does and his garage. You know, it's not hard to be aware of him, but so many car companies would be aware of YouTube channels like that, but then call Car and Driver and or Motor Trend
all
and
the
be
time.
Like,
yep.
You know, hey, do you want to go do? And the thing is as well, like a lot of publications, and you know, we are a publication, so we, you know, we do face those kind of pressures. That, as we saw that with the Tesla Plaid event, and I forget it was either Car and Driver or Motor Trend that did it. Like, there was so much pressure. Like, they were like, "Oh, can we do it at the track that we normally do it?" And Tesla like, "No, we do it at our track, and you use the sticky stuff, and you've got to do that." And it's like, because there's pressure to deliver, you end up having to agree to all those things. And yet if they'd laid all those things down to Brooks and been like, "No, you've got to do it our track and our driver." And he'd have probably gone like, "No, don't worry. I can wait." Like, and that's so cool because he hasn't got a staff of tons of people and, you know, responsibilities to pay for. So I'm just really pleased that they were able to do that with a YouTube channel. And you know, there's places for more outlets than just like the one or two that have been around for 80 years.
Well, that's the big news here. And for me, that's the biggest takeaway. It shows Rimac is open to a different way of thinking from an automaker. I think in general, the automotive sort of reporting sphere has transitioned from obviously paper magazines to written articles to now independent creators specializing in their own field. Like Tom does charging tests and he and I do range tests. I do a lot of performance stuff. No one else is doing what Tom and I are doing, at least in this country. So at least properly, I do very strongly believe that. So automakers pick up on that. They give us cars to test. That's awesome. And I love that we're sort of transitioning to this specialized, enthusiast, passionate driven coverage rather than just taking as much money from automakers as possible to pay the bills.
Right. So the thing with Remouse is Mate is the owner. He's like a young guy. He's like 32, I think, or 33. He's very accessible. He's got his own Facebook page. You can, you know, leave a comment and he'll probably see it and respond possibly if you, you know, say something that catches his eye.
I love it. It's not even clean. They've not even cleaned it. I love it. It's raw. Perfect. It's amazing.
They've been drying. There's a few videos out. They've been letting a few people drive the Navara. They have a couple, I believe, and they're going to be at Pebble Beach as well. Wow, and so, cool. Yeah, there's some videos of it like tearing through and like industrial park, like showing off. I think the guy is in the video I'm thinking of. He's a big real estate YouTuber, and he's got a lot of money and a lot of like fancy cars. And I believe he's a customer, Oh, they also mentioned in that if you want a remount Navara, they're making 150 of them. There's still a few that haven't been sold yet. So
that's pretty amazing, actually, because 150 is not much. This car has gotten a ton of attention, and there's way too many rich people in the world that would just buy this and park it in the garage. So why aren't they buying it?
I would buy it.
I know, but what is stopping this from being sold out immediately? There's a customer base there. The car is just bonkers on paper. I don't think there's a lack of coverage. So what's, you know, I would think 150 units, boom, sold out completely.
Right.
What do you guys think?
That's a bit of a mystery to me. I mean, that's way out of my league as far as like market wise. I don't look at like supercar market, because the supercars are generally, you know, combustion cars, and I don't really care. But I don't know exactly how limited. I know, like for like Ferraris, they Ferrari practically chooses the customer. They have like a customer base, and they, you know, they say, okay, we'll let you buy one of our cars. But I'm not sure, like off the top of my head, how big their production runs are.
Yeah, more than, I mean, some of them are like 10 cars, right?
Right.
Some of them are, you know, for like a La Ferrari, I think it was 500, something like this.
Okay.
It was quite a bit. So, you know, 150 doesn't seem hard to sell. There's at least 150 collectors that just have an open checkbook that put anything in. You have to understand, once you get to this level, the economics of supercar collecting is you're not thinking about the X number of million dollars you're plunking down on this car. You're thinking overall cost. So you have very little servicing costs, which is unique for a supercar, because they usually need $40,000 a year for an annual service. This, I imagine, doesn't need that. And what you really care about is what's your overall cost. The benefit of buying a low production vehicle is the values actually go up. So you're buying this as an investment. So you're going to plunk down $2 million. You're going to sell it for $2.4 in 6, 7, 8 years. That's the market. People aren't thinking about that initial upfront cost. I think there's zero, or at least very little, confidence in this brand holding its value in the eyes of supercar buyers. To me, totally disagree. I think this brand has the best electric vehicle technology with the most passionate team behind it. Now, obviously, buying a Bugatti with a Porsche with a large share in this company, I think this is going to be, you know, Rimac will be around for a really long time. Huge confidence. I worry that's not translating to the real world, though.
Well, if it's a matter of like the styling, so the Batista, the Pininfarina Batista, is like basically the Rimac Navara underneath. I'm not sure what the software differences are going to be. It's maybe just slightly slower off the line, but not, you know, not that you probably ever notice. But I think it looks like nicer. Definitely,
yeah.
Looks
nicer. And the Avaya looks nicer, in my opinion.
Yeah,
but I don't think the Avaya will have the technical prowess of either the Pininfarina or the Rimac. By the way, Pininfarina is an awesome company. They designed our colleagues over at Motor One's logo, which I think is an interesting story. Right. And, you know, someone commented they don't think they're buying it because it doesn't have a massive V12. And I have made the argument, and I will continue to make the argument, that supercars are not interesting unless they make a lot of noise to a lot of people, including probably me. You know, I just think that you buy a car for the drama of the driving experience, not the technical capabilities of it. But that's just me. There's got to be 150 people in this world who would buy a really cool EV supercar.
Right.
So, Kyle, I think you hit onto something when you talked about the fact that it's an unknown quantity. And, you know, the people that buy these supercars look at them as investments, like you said, as it's not just, oh, this is a cool car, I have to have it. They're not even emotionally connected to the cars in many instances. It's an investment. And I think at this point, we have no track record with Rimac. We don't know if it's going to appreciate or at what rate will it appreciate. So, you know, they might be saying, well, I'm going to take my money and put it into this other supercar because we know I'm going to get a 15% annual return on my money. And in 10 years, it's going to be worth X amount of money. And nobody really knows what the Rimac will be worth down the road. So I think the people that did put the money down, a lot of them are people that are emotionally connected to it and think it's just the coolest thing to ever come out. Whereas maybe the investors, the people that buy the car, never even look at it. It gets shipped to like their warehouse somewhere and it's being cared by their staff. They might be the people that have decided not to go in that direction because, you know, it's just, it's an unknown. They don't know what it's going to be worth in 10 years. Totally, you know, they might be looking at it and wondering, geez, after 10 years, the battery might be completely dead. You know, it might kill the value of this thing. It might not be worth anything. You know, you don't know. So they just say, pass, I'll go after the next supercar because I'm not ready to invest, you know, millions into a car with a battery that I have no track record with.
Well, yeah. So later today, we expect to see, so check out the Drag Times, the YouTube channel. The full results will be out sometime today. Brooks was on a plane yesterday and editing the video. And yes, they raced the Navara versus the Tesla Plaid Model S. So that's going to be great to watch. So Keith Ritter, it pops up some numbers, but I don't know if those are confirmed numbers. I'm not sure you're getting them from. I just checked out the Drag Times channel and it's not up there yet. But yeah. But let's move on.
Just ran the acceleration times, assuming a 1.5G launch, but I don't think he would know what the drop-off curve is.
Right.
I mean, probably in that region.
Yeah, it wasn't far off, probably. I mean, looking at
that. Right. But people...
Sounds about right.
Like 1.83...
On VHT is very possible.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see. With rollout...
With rollout on VHT, okay, maybe even without rollout. I mean, once you have a really sticky surface, I mean, you can go over 1G forwards. If you can go over 1G, then you go as fast as you want, really. How sticky you want to make the surface? How heavy is your car to push down? It's going to be heavy, sticky, and really torquey.
Let's talk about something that's a little more obtainium. So last week, I think we mentioned that Rivian had invited some of its early customers out to Normal, Illinois to check out its vehicles. Well, one of those customers has shared his experience there on the YouTube channel Rivian Stories. Now, it's about an hour-long interview, but so Rivian Stories is releasing it in segments on their channel. If you register for free on the Rivian's Stories website, you can watch the whole thing at once. But the segments that they're releasing on YouTube are better because they have they include more pictures and footage from the 2 days that he spent there. So it's a pretty good story and a great listen, especially if you're a Rivian fan, of course. So basically, this early customer, John Rhodes, he ordered an R1T like the day it debuted, and then an R1S shortly after for his wife. He then recently got a call inviting them out to the factory with 9 other customers, and they spent some time there getting wined and dined and riding in the vehicles with Rivian CEO RJ Scaringe, and touring the factory, and as well as driving the vehicles on an off-road course and Rivian's big oval circuit, which is kind of neat too. If you go to Google Maps, you just type in Rivian factory Normal, Illinois, and you can actually see the track from the overhead view. It's like an oval with super long straights. Apparently Mr. Rhodes was extremely impressed with the vehicle. Quality of the build, its performance abilities. He says that the acceleration felt like the equivalent of his 2019 Tesla Model S P100D. So impressive. I think Rivian say the R1T will have a 3 second 0-60. So as I said, RJ drove him around the track on the first day. And according to John, he didn't take it easy. We can't play the video here, but if you watch it, you can see he gets a little sideways a bit, and then they tackle some pretty intense off-road segments with hills and moguls, and on the oval with RJ, he brought it up to 115 miles an hour, just with RJ talking nonchalantly, explaining things all the time. But you can see, he puts the camera up a little bit. He's in the back seat, so you can see, part of the speedometer, and it's going, pretty nicely. When he drove it himself on the next day in the rain, I think he got it up to 120, and somebody else had it up to 129, which is not Tesla Model S speeds, but it's a pickup truck. You don't really need a pickup truck to go over 100 miles an hour. It did and does it quite competently. Stable, feels great. I did grab a couple screenshots that we can share, Martin. If you have, So. There.
Yeah, sure. Let me grab those.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's all right. So one of the shots is the center screen is in off-road. There we go. Off-road mode. And the other one is in sports mode. Basically, it just gives you an idea what the screen looks like. I don't know if we've seen that before, but I think it looks pretty neat there. The screen's a bit smaller than what we see on the Teslas, but it's still, I like it. It's not, you know, sticking up above the dash, which, you know, some people will appreciate. Yeah. So the first video on our post on Inside EVs is under 10 minutes. And later episodes, we'll talk about his personal driving experience. And you can tell he was extremely impressed. He talks about going up this 65% grade and back down again, like in the rain. And then he asks if he could go back up and reverse, and he does it. You know, he goes, you know, in the rain, hardly, you know, setup was super easy. There was like hardly a slip of the tires. And he also mentions the ride on the rough portion was extremely good with the wheels experiencing a lot of travel. You know, the ride was like, he couldn't understand it. It was like magic, I guess. So I don't know. So that sounds
pretty promising. Dominic, are you saying a reservation holder and enthusiast loved the vehicle?
right. Well, obviously, it's a
shocker.
Right. Yeah.
But I wonder how much experience he has driving capable, you know, off-road right. vehicles, you know, that are internal combustion. You know, it's not to, you know, throw sure, cold sure. water on mm-hmm. it, but, you know, it's I can understand how he would be so excited. He's getting the vehicle, right. you know, he's been waiting for it forever. Now he finally gets to drive in it, and it's going to be a tremendously capable vehicle. There's no doubt about that. But you know, it's also, you know, let's temper the enthusiasm a little bit here. Now let's get some people behind the wheels of these that know off-roading, you know, and can really compare it to the other vehicles that they've driven and experienced.
That's the big question. You know, I mean, yeah. I could put people in my smart car and blow them away with its off-road capability, right? Tom's been there for that.
I was kind of blown away by the smart car's off-road capability. There you go. But a maniac was behind the wheel, so that was part of the equation there.
Look, I got out of my smart car the other day. This was the topic of the beginning of the show in the comments. I got this really nice
right?
And so I got out of the smart car the other day like this after I handbrake skidded into a parking lot. And man, did I just light up the whole street. Everyone was laughing at me. It was awesome. And
Jeez.
Look, you put on the hat, then, you know, you just gotta, respect the hat to wear the hat. So, you know, totally to Tom's point here, I would not expect anything but very positive reviews from this early wave of, you know, drivers of Rivian, and not to say it's a bad vehicle. We could all be saying the same thing when we get inside, but we still have no clue. We have no idea if it's going to be, you know, calibrated well, truly good, because I can drive things up very steep hills and impress anyone that can move under its own power. I mean, a gradient doesn't necessarily speak to a car's capability. What does is, let's take it out to Moab. Let's take it in the sand dunes. Let's put it in all the paces that we like to put off-road vehicles. I have a hill climb challenge that I run every four-wheel drive on just a few miles from my house. It's a solid, serious hill climb challenge. Let's get it out there. And hopefully, based off of everything we're hearing, it should perform really well. But you never know until you do it.
Well, they're supposed to start deliveries in September. And I haven't seen anything in, like, you know, press invites to any Rivian rides yet. So it's
nothing. It's been silent. Like, the only one I think is like Emmy Hall, who did the Rebel Rally in it.
Right. And that was a pre-production vehicle. That's not even a production vehicle. So are they going to, you know, let us drive it like after they begin making deliveries? Like, usually,
I wouldn't be surprised. There's very often, recently at least, like Audi e-tron GT is a big example. The press embargo lifted after they had hit dealers. So if I had realized this and put it all in my head, I could have had an Audi RS e-tron GT full review days before anyone else could have done it, because I didn't go on the first drive. I just went to the dealer and drove theirs. Right. So this is just the nature of the business. And I wouldn't be surprised if Rivian goes into it. They don't seem all that interested in working with the press, because at this point, it's all positive. It's all good. The trucks are going to sell themselves. The only thing they're going to open themselves up to, honestly, is criticism. And that could hurt them the most. If the customers are reviewing them, they're getting them, they're reliable, they're happy with them, that's the best case scenario for the company. They don't honestly need the media to sell these things early on. Maybe in 8 years when they've run out of, you know, or initial customers or, you know, some amount of time.
Right.
But right that's now, really the, good, I think it's a good show opening them up for failure.
I hadn't thought about that because even like the Tesla full self-driving videos that those in the beta program will put online and like the car's going down like the wrong way down a one race street and it's about
isn't this amazing
it's like a concrete ball like, whoa like, this is amazing like Elon said brilliant. And it's like, so you're right, why would they involve anyone who's possibly going to say anything negative? So I had no idea. Considered that.
So that all said, and I agree with what you're saying in a lot of points. We have begun to talk to Rivian about getting a vehicle for a test drive that's going to be set up sometime soon.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. We've been talking to them. Yeah. And maybe you've been farther and they keep saying, yes, we want to do this, do that, and do this.
Yeah. Just in the last week, they seem to be starting to reach out and say, okay, you know, who would you like to send and, you know, possible dates and things like that. So at some point, I think pretty soon, we're gonna have formal invitations and it should be interesting. But it's very interesting that they did it this way and let the customers. It's brilliant. It's great. And is it marking a shift in the industry? You know, Tesla kind of started this halfway. You know, with their reveals, they had at least in the beginning they used to invite all the media, and then it turned into we'll invite the YouTubers, the Tesla. You know, army and all sorts of people that, you know, really talk about Tesla online. Yeah. And then now it's more like Tesla super fans are the ones that get all the invitations to the reveals. So they started this where they didn't produce a bunch of vehicles, let the press organize press meetings. And now Rivian seems to be kind of going in that direction also. It's going to be interesting to see how Lucid treats this. You know, they've been a little more press friendly, Lucid, as far as I'm concerned. They've invited us to a bunch of things. They've let me drive in the car. They've let Kyle drive in the car. We haven't driven it yet, but you know, that's going to happen pretty soon. But is this the way the industry is going to change? Is it going to transition to instead of doing these big organized press pools a month before the vehicle launch, are they going to sort of the ramp up to a launch? They're going to let reservation holders and YouTubers and kind of fans ride the cars and talk about them. You know, is that what we're going to say?
Yes, 100%. No reason. Honestly, if I was starting a car company and I had a good following, why would I open it up to the press who have no idea anything about electric cars? Every EV that's loaned is here's why I couldn't charge the EV and here's why you shouldn't buy one. Right. That's just going to open up for crazy failure. Yeah.
Well, that's why. Go ahead, Kyle. Well, no, so that's why the press drives on the EVs are very controlled. Oh.
So you know, they're not. They're like follow this route, and then I'm like, I'm gonna go over here. I'll see you guys in a couple days.
Yeah, and they're like, no, there's no chargers over there, Kyle. You can't go over there. There's nowhere for you to charge.
If you thought the U.S. was bad because we're spending the month of September in Germany, you should see all of the convincing I have to go through with all these PR execs for the German automakers to let us take their cars. They're like, oh well, you can stay around the headquarters, and you know, there's not many chargers around here. And I'm just like, give me the car. You're going to have a lot of miles on it, and I'll see you in a few days.
Yeah.
I will say Porsche was really cool in that regard. When we did the press drive from Copenhagen to Hamburg, Germany, it was all pre-programmed in the nav system, you know, the route, but you could go off the route. They didn't even like say, don't go off the route. You know, they're like, here, we have a route plotted for you. And I was with Alex Dykes from, the YouTube channel, Alex on Autos, great guy. Got to spend a couple of days with him on that long drive. And we went totally off the route. And then the funny thing is our system shut down. The car was working, but none of the screens functioned. And then this was a super early pre-production, you know.
They still kind of do that now, to be honest.
well, Kyle, at least you know where you are. We're in the middle of, you know, Denmark, where we have no clue where we are. We already went off the route. We're on these backcountry roads and then black. And we're like looking at each other like, all right, what the hell do we do now? Where do we go? Where do we, you know, it was pretty funny. It made the adventure that much better. But we found our way back to the next meeting point, and Porsche had another Taycan waiting for us there. So
nice.
Of course. You know, when you don't, when you can't wait for a car to charge, here's another one. look, I will say though, that the press drives for EVs are catered towards auto journalists that have no idea how an electric car works, which is 90% of our colleagues, to be brutally honest.
Sure.
Hey, but they're getting better, Kyle. They're getting better. I will say years earlier, they really had no clue about electric cars. But now when, and I noticed, and we haven't done a lot of press drives the last year and a half because of COVID, obviously. But I noticed in 2018, 2019, when we would go to these press drives, and there'd be 20, 30 journalists there, when we had conversations about the cars, a lot of the people were getting up to speed. Flashback to like 2013, 2014, 2015, when I was, you know, in having dinner with 15, 20 other journalists from all the big outlets, they had no clue about kilowatts, kilowatt hours, charging rates. It was just like, you know, like the first time they ever drove in an EV. But the last couple of years, they're getting more, and there's a few of them that are like completely up to speed, that like know as much as well.
Oh, sure.
Close to what we do on electric vehicles, which is good to see.
I was talking because we're starting you know, some more stuff up. So I've been talking to some automotive freelancers in sort of the area, and not a single one of the, you know, eight people that we interviewed had ever driven a Tesla. And I'm like, right. How can you be an automotive expert and never driven like the hottest car the world's ever seen, you know, in terms of numbers? And
just
so
churro one.
It's literally $100. Just go drive one for a day. Go to Tesla store and take a free test drive.
That's
to
what we
me,
did. Yeah.
It just shows an extreme lack of effort and competence for someone who wants to call themselves an automotive expert. I also offered up my Tesla for all of them to drive and spend a week with. So that car is going to go out on a media tour around Colorado. nice. And Tesla, if you care and you don't want that car going around because it's beat up with 90,000 miles and has parts hanging off of it, then maybe consider sending a press car out here.
Yeah.
They're send not watching anyway.
Well, that right there, Kyle, is why they haven't driven the Teslas yet, because Tesla hasn't provided them with one.
Well, that's
one.
What they and keep saying. They say, yeah, well, exactly, it didn't show up in the driveway.
Exactly.
And I'm like, and well, not everything shows up in the driveway.
But they to them, it does. To them, it does. That's how every car they've ever reviewed happens. Know, they either get flown to a place where there's 20 of them waiting, or it pulls up in their driveway on a truck. If that doesn't happen, listen, I'm not making an effort to drive it.
I know, but to me, that's just insane. Yeah. So
no, I agree.
Getting back to Rivian just for a second. Doc Tatu in the comments mentioned that the Rivian also is also making trucks for Amazon, and that's part of the... part of the interview, he talks about that a little bit. They showed him, they showed them the Amazon part of the factory, and apparently they go down the line like sideways, and they add stuff to the front and the back mostly, right? So, yeah, so that was kind of like an interesting little thing. And a couple more things about the that test drive before I went on, before I move on, he did point out that the one pedal driving, he said, was super impressive. Like it would even come to us. Like a stop when he's going down a steep grade, he could bring it to a stop. He brought it to a stop from over 100 miles an hour without, you know, touching the brakes. Just
that sounds about any other one pedal system.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's calibrated to decelerate to zero, not in terms of braking force, but in terms of braking G. So, you know, no matter the gradient, it'll just blend in more friction brakes to bring you to a stop in any, at least in any one pedal I've driven.
Right. So anyway, it sounds like they've got to get that together. And there's one thing about the charging. So at first, this was the only like negative-y kind of sounding thing which came out, which wasn't, you know, it's not so bad. So at first, it sounds like charging, it will only peak at 200 kilowatts at first.
Seems awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great, but it's going to increase to 250 kilowatts with a update over the air update.
It's a heavy car, so yeah. What's the curve? Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. Who cares what the maximum rate is? I mean, it's so ridiculous. Like the ID4, people were complaining that it only maxes out at 125. All these new cars like Mustang Mach-E and other cars are 150 now. Volkswagen really dropped the ball. Yeah, no, they didn't. look at the charging curve. It averages 90 kilowatts up to 80% charge, you know, and you know, that's the curve is where it's at.
Unless you're doing some serious,
I'm making that a t-shirt. Tom Malagni, the curve is where it's at.
But unless you're doing serious road trips, it also doesn't really matter, like what the maximum.
Right. Oh, I wanted to bring up something Volkswagen related too, because I saw this on a post from one of my friends who owns an ID4, and they're getting software updates. The first one's apparently rolling out. And so it'll be interesting to see what's in the first release. I know they're going to be doing more things.
Is that the one that has to go back to the dealership first and then
this
over,
is
the
over the air?
Okay.
Early on.
An actual over the air update. Yeah. Actual over the air update. Finally, they're getting it together.
Baked over the air update.
It's taken them a while, but.
Time.
Yeah.
I think they said publicly they're aiming for four a year, like four big ones a year. I think it was one a quarter. It wasn't one a month. That was too much, but maybe
it's more structured than Tesla's approach. It's they're going to bundle it up and then deploy to the car.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll loosen up as they get more familiar with it and used to it down the road, you know?
Yeah. I just think, you know, the German automakers are freaking out about over the air because it's in terms of security, in terms of chance of failure during software loading. You know, these are car companies adapting to software, not tech companies adapting to cars. And so they're very conservative in nature. And honestly, it's impressive they got to this point, but they need to. Tesla's setting the standard when it comes
to software. Tesla dragged them there. You're right.
Volkswagen,
they wouldn't have gotten there without Tesla.
Totally agree.
I'm convinced that they would have never done this because the lawyers are, you know, really freaking out, as Kyle said, over security purposes with these OTAs.
And I understand that Volkswagen, you know, they contracted out their software stuff before. Now they're bringing it all in-house.
Well,
but originally,
like 40 different providers or more.
Right.
But that's with any car company. And so now they've created CSO, car software organization, where they're taking the Audi, Porsche, Volkswagen, Bugatti, Lamborghini, Ducati, all the Volkswagen Group brands, bringing them under one roof. Apparently, it's a nightmare internally from what I hear. Everyone's just concerned if they're going to lose their A6 company car and have to drive a Golf. Has been the biggest issue of the whole thing. So that's, you know, to be expected. But yeah, it's I hope they're at least trying. I think I really do think they are understanding where they need to get. It's just they were so far in the deep end on the wrong side of everything. It's just a big ship to move.
I mean, they've got to move. As we were mentioning at the top of the show, Tesla wants to make 20 million cars a year, and they're pretty ambitious. And if the other companies, you know, don't get their stuff together and have a competitive product, you know, Tesla might eat their lunch. I mean, that's what they want to do.
So someone commented that Volkswagen's not asking the users for help. I know regular EV dad, something like this, has an ID4. His battery apparently had some issues or maybe even bricked itself entirely. I don't really know. But I know the Volkswagen executive team has been working with him, data logging, checking on things. I know, you know, people inside of Volkswagen that are taking direct feedback from customers. Maybe this person, maybe Tony, has an ID4 and hasn't received a survey. But I assure you, the people who are making videos, making noise, putting stuff up are getting good response from Volkswagen, as well as Ford with the Mach-E. Uh-huh. Ford is probably the most involved with their customer base, I would say. Uh-huh. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And it's still kind of early on, Tony, to send out, surveys and so forth. There's not a lot of ID4 owners out there. They haven't had the car for that long. I would think maybe, you know, a solid year after the launch is when Volkswagen might, you know, start reaching out to their customers and saying, hey, you've had the car for a while now. You understand what you like and what you don't like about it. And that might be when they start looking for feedback. It's still kind of early. There really aren't a lot of ID4s out on the road yet.
Right. Hey, so, okay, well, we strayed from Rivian a little bit, but I just want to bring it back just briefly.
More Rivian.
So I just should mention that in contrast to what we said in a previous podcast, it doesn't look like Arizona has the second Rivian factory locked up after all. According to a new report, Fort Worth, Texas is actually the front runner for the $5 billion factory. And Fort Worth is basically on the west side of Dallas. And the factory site is actually on the west side of Fort Worth. And that's about, it's north of Austin, about halfway between it and Oklahoma City. So a decision is expected later this year. I don't know if anyone has anything they want to say about that.
I think Elon commented on it, and I think Elon was correct. Not that I'm an expert in manufacturing. Leave that to the Monroe team and plenty of other people way smarter than I am. Right. But at the end of the day, Elon basically said, get your first one running first.
Yeah, I mean, in the impact report, they have a little graphic actually showing, you know, the layout, what they learned from, you know, they had Fremont, and then they had Shanghai, like the layout of how the flow of everything. So you could tell they took what they, because they messed up at Fremont pretty badly because they, you know, starting from scratch, and they didn't have tons of capital to just, you know, completely overhaul and make a, you know, huge building. So they just kind of built it as they went. And, you know, there are a lot of issues. Like when they started to make Model 3, they had like the bar was up here, and then they just kind of belly flopped in front of the bar. They didn't even make it to the bar. just, you know,
well, look, Lucid's a greenfield. Terrible. Lucid took the same approach with like Shanghai, right? They took Peter Hochholdinger, who's been in charge of so many production lines in Germany for Audi and other very high quality brands, mm-hmm. went to Tesla, fixed the Model 3 ramp up thing, came in at the worst possible time, built the tent, got cars out, and now basically was given a flat field to say, build what you want.
Right.
And I think it's going to be impressive to see.
Yeah. Does anybody else find it interesting that Lucid Rivian is looking at Texas like Tesla did, even though Texas is a state that doesn't allow the direct sales of electric vehicles?
I think
vehicles.
It's so separate.
You know, I
would link it, man. If I had,
you know, exactly
$1 billion investment going in, I'd be all over those lawmakers, you know.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, investing billions of dollars in a state that basically, you know, doesn't allow you to sell cars in their state. You know, I mean,
I think it's an antiquated law. I'm not against dealers, but I will say
dealers and
some of them suck. Based off of my dad's shopping for ID4s, especially, he went to two Volkswagen dealers that were charging, you know, way over, that were rude. And he said were the worst experiences. He went down to Maryland, had the best experience of giving him $2,200 off the next ID4. Sounds awesome. You know, the thing you get with a centralized sales model like Tesla, like Lucid, like Rivian is more control over the customer experience. It's going to be more uniform across your stores. At the end of the day, the automakers can only suggest things for dealers to do, and they can't really force them into too many things. Tom, you would know better than I would.
I mean, I've personally worked with probably close to 300 dealers right now in the last 4 years with my the electric vehicle dealership training program. So yeah, and what you're all saying is 100% correct. There are some dealers that, in my opinion, are terribly run businesses. It's a business. It's like anything else. You look at 100 restaurants, and there's probably 30 that are run really well, 30 that are okay, and 40 that really are run poorly. It's the same thing. You know, it's all management. But we have to get to a point where we understand that direct sales is going to be here. It's not a flash in the pan. It's going to go away. So we have to figure out a way of evolving and, you know, not just completely tearing down the dealership model. I don't support that because I think these dealers paid a lot of money for their dealership franchises. We can't all of a sudden just take away that equity that they have. But there has to be a way that everybody can play in the sandbox. And right now it's just a fight. It's just, you know, direct sales against dealership model. You suck. This is the way to do it. And you know, it's just not working. We have to figure out a way where we can have kind of a little of both, where the dealers don't get hurt. Maybe somebody can order a car directly from Ford, but then, you know, it gets picked up at the dealership. It's a set price. People love that the pricing. We talked about the ID4 and the Mach-E, how some dealerships are gouging, you know, $5,000, $10,000 off of MSRP. You don't get that with Tesla. Now you do get price increases and stuff like we've seen recently. But you know, everybody pays the same amount. It's almost like no stress buying. Buying a car is, you know, for many people, an incredibly stressful thing. A lot of us that know cars, it's not, you know, we go in and we feel like, oh, I got the better of him. But there's a lot of people, and I have friends that go to dealerships and just, they no matter when they buy a car, they leave thinking they got screwed, that they got robbed. And, you know, the set pricing really takes that away. And, We have to figure out a way of evolving into some sort of a model where we can have some direct sales, we can have dealerships, we can have maybe something in the middle. But this all goes back to the fact that Texas is, taking a very hard line against direct sales. And I just find it odd that these electric vehicle makers that want to sell their cars in that state and aren't allowed to are investing billions in the state. You know, I wouldn't give them any of my money if they won't let me sell my cars there.
Yeah, that makes sense, Tom. I think you've convinced me. Also, I think maybe the answer lies in other businesses, such as the restaurant industry, perhaps, where franchise stores and company-owned stores have an intermixing relationship. Right. I think it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. But for sure, the fighting can't go on forever. And I think in the end, the customer base will choose how they want it. And right now, the brands that are the hottest, at least in terms of speaking about it online, are the brands that are direct sales.
Hey, so let's talk about a new direct sale. I don't know. Tell me, I'm not sure how this model works, fits into those ones exactly, because it's a new, we're talking Polestar 2. So if you were hoping for a better deal on the Polestar 2, you're in luck. A new entry-level version has been announced, and the regular version gets a much better price. So now for $49,000, $49,900, there's a $1,300 destination on top of that, but you can take away the $7,500 federal tax credit and end up at $43,700. You can get a 2022 Polestar 2. That's $10,000 less than the 2021. There is a catch, though. It may be missing some features. But for more money, you can add some of them back. One of the features you can get back or get in there now is a heat pump, which could improve your cold weather range, they say, by 10%. So, but if you want an even better deal, you can opt for the new entry-level model for $45,900 with the addition of the destination charge and the subtraction of the federal tax credit. That could be $39,700. You can now get a Polestar 2 with 265 miles of VPA range. That's 16 miles more than the 2021 version. But instead of a 150 kilowatt motor front and back, you get a 170 kilowatt motor, but on the front. That's about
On the front or on the rear?
It said on the front in this story.
No way. Yeah, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Front wheel drive.
Oh boy.
I know, right?
It just went downhill way quick. I have a Polestar 2 booked coming up in the next few days. Finally going to run it through some tests. I kind of laxed on it, but I called them up. They said, yeah, take one. No problem. So going to do all the stuff with it. And, but front wheel drive, you've really got to be kidding me here. That's ridiculous. You have a rear wheel drive motor in there already. A car drives better with a rear drive system.
I don't know why.
Apparently. Yeah, I bet I would be so surprised if that's true.
Okay. Well, that's something to keep on. Maybe when you talk about them, you can ask them maybe, or I'll check into it to myself after this and just see if it's like, I didn't read the press release from Polestar directly.
Yeah, someone said Kyle is triggered. That 100%. Yeah, ridiculous. No. For a performance-oriented, stylish, premium vehicle that doesn't need to be front-wheel drive. You know, Volvo in the past, not to say Polestar is Volvo, but, you know, similar people working on the project, sure, have been front-wheel drive-based vehicles, and that's just the whole spa architecture. Great-looking car. But now here's your opportunity to go back to original Volvo roots, go rear-wheel drive, make a better balanced handling vehicle. Martin, you would know better than anyone. When it rains and you're in that Kona, you just spin the front tires all day long.
I mean, it's just the worst experience of the car is if you want to put your foot down at 30 miles an hour in sport mode, it's just going to spin the wheels.
It's just...
Right. It's like, and if you've got any kind of steering lock on, like just 1 degree, like if there's any, you know,
that wheel inside peel, wheel, baby.
And that, it's just got too much, not too much power, but it's just, yeah, it's front wheel drive. There's weight up there, but still it's not, it's just not tuned enough to it's not designed for that. But also, right, yeah, that's the downside of the car. It's so much power in it.
See, front wheel,
what it can handle.
Have you driven, I just want to get on front wheel drive. There is a benefit of front wheel drive in EVs, which is increased regen. If you go to the power management screen in the Kona, Martin,
yeah,
and you pull the regen paddle,
yeah,
on the left and touch the brake pedal, you'll get like almost 170 kilowatts of regen.
Can you?
A ton. You got to pull it up and do it. Go like 80, 85 miles an hour. Stand on the brakes pretty hard with the left paddle held, and you'll just see this number shoot to the moon. It's cool.
Wow. Yeah.
I'll give that's that a benefit of a front motor. It's not all bad. That's not worth putting a front motor only on your car, especially when you already got a spot in the back for it.
I mean, they also perform a little better in the snow.
Rear wheels, you have the motor on the wheels.
Right. So front wheel drive became popular, you know, as I was growing up, you know, rear wheel drive was pretty much everything except until like the 68 Tornado from Oldsmobile. But, you know, it started creeping in because it had in the snow conditions, it just had better traction because you have the weight of the motor over the front wheels. So it'll work better, you know, under those kind of conditions, under sloppy conditions. You know, it's just a better arrangement than rear wheel drive. And it really took over in a big way, like the automotive industry. Everything was front wheel drive. It seemed like forever. But now with electric vehicles, there's no big motor up front. You know, the weight's kind of evenly, you know, distributed throughout the chassis. So when you take off, now the weight kind of goes towards the back wheel on the back wheel. So it makes more sense to have a rear wheel drive. I don't know why you wouldn't.
Maybe just like luggage space in the back or something. Like maybe this bigger motor. It's not that much bigger, but maybe it just redesigning it. Re-engineering it, so, over there, just put it up front or something.
So this 170 kilowatt hour motor, that's 228 horsepower instead of 402 horsepower. The 0 to 60 is still like 7 seconds, so it can hustle a little bit. The dual motor does it in like 4.5 seconds, which is pretty great. So with a difference of $4,000...
Everyone will buy an all-wheel drive.
Yeah. You think so?
Yes, 100%. You're already in that category. You're into it for 45. You're talking 45 to 50.
$4,000
the
is not
only
a big
difference
amount of money.
Is in New Jersey, where you hit a pricing cap. And so in Jersey, you'll get, you know, if you stay under, what is it, 50 grand, you get $5,000 off, Tom?
Yeah, so they actually, it was under 55,000, but they changed it for 2021 just now. And you get, if you're under 45,000, you get $5,000. So this is going to miss it by $500.
No, I think they'll change that.
Oh, come on. And they're headquartered in New Jersey. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, and but then if it's 45 to 55, you still get 2,000. You don't get the full $5,000 you get if it's under $45,000. Because we ran it last year, was the first year of the program, and we ran out of money. $30 million is set for every year for 10 years. It's $300 million program. We ran out of money in 8 months. And it was, I think it was 84% Teslas. That 84% of the money went to Teslas. And so you know, they had to rework the whole thing, and they lowered the full $5,000. It has to be if the vehicle is under 45K.
So Connecticut does it is you need to buy it in order to get the Connecticut state tax credit from a Connecticut licensed dealer. And that's how they got around the Tesla thing.
The Tesla thing. Yeah, no, this goes through the BPU. The Board of Public Utilities is the one that administered this program. And so anybody qualifies for it. And it's now a point of sale rebate. Yeah, it is.
Buying a Tesla, you are buying an EV.
And you know, I'm not completely against the price, the way they set it up now. I benefited. I was one of the people that got $5,000 rebate on my 2021 Model 3.
And it's on the hood.
Really
right?
Nice. On the hood, you do nothing. The dealer does it. So you don't have to fill up paperwork. Nothing. It just gets done at point of sale. But I actually support the fact that they're giving a bigger incentive for vehicles that are under 45K, because I think the people that are playing in that sandbox could use a bigger rebate. And right. You know, if you're buying a $55,000 car, you know, $2,000 off cash on the hood is good enough for you. You know, you don't need the full $5,000. The people that are doing this is going to be great for Chevy Bolts and the Bolt EUVs because they're all going to be under 45K.
Leaf the new low price, by the way, is going to be free. It is going to be free.
In New Jersey, it gets a $7,500 federal tax credit. It gets $5,000 cash on the hood and no sales tax. That's another
thing. You're talking $18,000. Like,
it's crazy.
New, car.
Right. New Jersey has the best electric vehicle incentives in the country.
Right. Oh, and that's the dealer selling it at full time.
Who would have thought that? Who would have realized that?
then there's room to discount the car on top of that.
Yeah.
So it's, your lease is literally going to be $0.
The leases are crazy here.
If you're going to lease an EV out in New, the Leaf is like a no-brainer practically.
Yeah. But you can't.
I think I'm going to go lease one.
Just so you know, you can't come here and do that unless you have a New Jersey driver's license, New Jersey register the car here. You can't come from Pennsylvania and buy one here and get all these incentives.
I got a way around it. I know someone named Tom Malagni who is A, Mafia, and B, I can be on his utility bill.
Exactly.
Tom, I'm moving in.
I'm gonna have like 15 EVs registered to my name, right? No, I think there's a limit in this program. I have to look it up. I think during the whole life of this program, the 10 years, I think you can buy 4 cars or something like that. Okay. So there is a limit, but I mean, I will in the course of the 10 years probably buy more than 4 EVs,
just lots of wives,
testing and everything. But there's nothing against my wife buying it and register it in her name.
There you go.
So, you know, we might be able to get 8 in this household.
Well, you better max it out.
Oh man, I wanted to hit this real quick. We have another bit of news I just wanted to mention. So Chevrolet shared a bit of video this week showing off, it's like the Hummer EV. It's the all-electric Silverado will also have rear-wheel steering. So I think this is great. Besides the fact that it'll be more nimble, this truck is shaping up to be a more affordable, practical version of the Hummer EV. And at least I'm hoping they can shave off some of the weight and the cash off the price tag. The Hummer EV is supposed to weigh like 9,500 pounds. And edition one costs $112,595, which is, you know, for a truck buyer, that's like just nuts. So it'd be nice to see one get below the cheapest version announced for the Hummer SUT, the 80,000 EV 2X, which is only coming in the spring of 2023. The Ford Lightning, by the way, which is also it's a more conventionally shaped competition. Will probably mostly sell like the 50,000 to 60,000, I think, neighborhood. Although the fully loaded Lightning ER Platinum version will get up to around 90K. So if the Silverado can offer 400 miles of range for like, I don't know, 65, I think it will do pretty well. I don't know, Kyle, what do you think?
I think you can charge as much as you want for a truck and they'll all sell.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Pretty much. I see some big boy, heavy duty, $100,000 trucks left and right everywhere. Not even just in this part of the country, in Texas, in California. It's a fashion symbol. At the end of the day, companies aren't trying to electrify the masses, even though they might say it. They're trying to sell as many trucks as they can at the highest amount of profit per truck. And that's selling the maxed out ones with the massaging seats and all the kit. And people will buy them, no question. So that's what they're going to focus on.
I got to say, when I was up in London yesterday, I saw a Ford F-150.
Did you really?
It's ridiculous. It was,
and that's imported, a small truck here.
Yeah, exactly.
Imported, left-hand drive. And I was like, that is ridiculous. It looked like nothing else on the road. I was like, what's
was
that?
Was he wearing doing? This, getting out of it? He was like, hey, I got my F-150.
No, it was just like squeezing down these little London roads and folding in the wing mirrors. I'm like, nah, dude. Nah.
That's amazing. That is so cool. I would love to do a video where we take like a big dually over there, something that you really would have never seen. Like, because Martin, that F-150 is small here.
We don't have
I swear.
Big trucks. No.
Man, if you go to Google Maps and stuff, you just pick a spot out in the country and in the UK and like, you know, do the street view thing. Man, they have little tiny, tiny roads. I'd love to kind of go there and just drive on to see what the heck that's even like.
Worse than the UK is Italy. Go to any of these small little Italian provinces or cities. You're like, like you can barely walk through some of these. You got to lose 20 pounds just to fit through the street.
Yeah.
I saw a picture. I think it was on Twitter. I think it was yesterday. It was either a Ferrari or a Lamborghini that somebody got stuck in one of those alleyways. This. Did you see it?
Yeah. That was great.
How do you manage to, you know, be rich enough to afford something like that, but dumb enough to
know? Oh, that's most of it.
Yeah,
I rich equals so. Smart, dumb?
I guess not. When I mean, if, well, I always think of, you know, people like, you know, make their money and become rich, but then a lot of people just like inherit it or whatever, you know, or get lucky.
Yeah. But really quick before we go, I've had at least 2 or 3 people post, hey, Tom, where's your Lightning review? And I apologize. You know, I got an opportunity to visit the Ford complex and ride in the Lightning. And then I went on like almost a 2-week vacation. So I just haven't had time. I have a lot of video to edit and put together into a video. It's coming soon. I'm going as quick as I can, I promise. But this is like the first time I've taken any time off work, I think, since COVID started in a year and a half. And my wife and I have been traveling to friends' houses and going out of state and really haven't been doing too much as far as videos and even writing for Inside EV. So I apologize for that. I'll get it up as soon as possible.
Yeah. Vacation. I need to take one of those sometime too. I don't even know when the last time I was on. But anyway, so I think that brings us to the end of our show. I don't know. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EV's forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching on YouTube, or a rating if you're listening on another platform, that helps us get more. Yep, thumbs up. That was great last week. Tom put up this special plea at the end for thumbs up, and you all delivered very well. It was awesome.
We got the most likes ever on any of our podcast shows. Right. So we appreciate that. That helps.
I'm surprised anyone likes it. Let's be honest.
I love it.
But that does help. The more likes it gets, YouTube does look at that in their algorithms and presents this to more people. So it gives us an opportunity to get a better, bigger audience if it has more likes.
Right on. Thumbs up to you too, Chris Largent. Or Lejeune, I don't know how you pronounce it.
Chris is a great supporter since the early days of the podcast.
Yeah,
if you need a wine tour, you need a tour of the wine Napa Valley. Yes,
we missed Chris him when we man. Were just out in Napa, but we're going to go out and see him again. He's going to show us around. It's going to be awesome.
Right. So don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Malogny is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.